fly atop the skyline of downtown Chicago to 38 states and Canada. Your host for this evening, Justin Kaufman.
Good evening, everybody. How about it, everybody? 720 WGN 312-981-7200 is the phone number. With you tonight for a truncated program. We're only on till 8:30 till pregame for the Blackhawks takes over. As the Blackhawks taking on the Golden Knights tonight in Sin City. The voices you hear. We've got some great talent in studio tonight because we've decided to take this time, the very small amount of time that we have, to bring you yet another one of our Sweet 16 matchups of the Ultimate Cage Match, which we've been doing all week.
He pulls a knife.
Who's the U-boat commander?
You pull a gun.
Hi, dude.
That's nasty, why?
That's Chet, Gary.
Now, Justin Kaufman presents the ultimate Chicago movie, Cage Match. Bueller.
Tell me your children.
Welcome to the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match here on WGN Radio, our quest to find the best Chicago movie of all time. We started with 64 films. We let the WGN radio staff whittle it down. The first two rounds are done, and we're at this point, the Sweet 16. Over the course of the next couple weeks, we're bringing you matchups of those Chicago movies. You call in, you text, you vote online for your favorite. It's on the WGN radio Facebook page, 312-981-7200, our phone number. Last night, the Untouchables narrowly defeated Home Alone to move on to the Elite Eight, joining Blues Brothers and Adventures in Babysitting, who have already won their matchups. Tonight, the number one seeded Ferris Bueller's Day Off takes on Cooley High. Ferris takes a day off to go downtown. Cochise and Preach also take a day off to pal around the near north side. It's classic 80s white suburbia versus 60s black inner city. Even though these two films are vastly different, they capture life in Chicago high schools.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
So far this semester, he has been absent 9 times.
9 times?
9 times.
It's his job, Mr. Mason's class. He moved a midterm up from Friday to Monday.
And you never thought you had a week to study.
Monday? I mean, that blows all whole weekend.
Oh, man, I gotta go back and get my history book.
Hi, I'm Abe Froman. Party of three for 12. Is there a problem?
You're Abe Froman.
That's right. I'm Abe Froman,
the sausage king of Chicago.
I'd like to get through to the washroom.
Let the ladies pass.
Hey, Mama, go walk someplace else.
Why don't you gamble someplace else?
Because we're gambling here, sweet thing.
This is a restaurant, not an alley.
Hey, keep on stepping, baby. We want it to be preached till we go to church.
Y'all need to go to church.
Adamowski? Adamson?
Here.
Adler?
Here.
Anderson? Anderson?
Here.
Bueller? 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 Bueller?
$15? Baby, that's a whole lot of money.
You pretty black fine thing, you got to pay for what you get.
Under arrest.
Well, y'all don't look like no cops to me.
That's why they hired us, baby. Because we don't look like cops.
Gummy bear? It's been in my pocket. They're real warm and soft.
312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you tonight and why you think Ferris or Cooley High should move on. In studio tonight, to rep for Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Sun-Times film critic, and all-around movie celebrity, Richard Roper. Richard, thanks for being here.
Justin, I'm so happy to be here and to talk about Ferris Bueller's Day Off for the first time since 1986. I've never mentioned this
before.
As you know, I'm a huge champion of this film. One of the great high school movies of all time, one of the great Chicago and Chicago area movies of all time.
How about
Not surprised to find out it's the number one seed.
The number one seed going against the upstart, the Cinderella, represented by a relatively unknown media personality named Rokan.
First of all, I want to point out that Richard, for many years, his license plate was Save Ferris.
It was.
It's true.
That's true.
That is absolutely true. We had the same car. Even before we worked together.
That's how we could tell the difference, because when they would pull up, I'd say, okay, I got to save Ferris. Don't get in that one.
People always said it was my license plate. But it was really his car. It's a long story.
What was your license plate? Just normal?
Neurotic.
Yeah. All right. So I feel, you know what I feel like here is I'm going up against Ferris Bueller with this relatively small independent film, Cooley High, from the 1970s, is I feel like when Miami of Ohio has to play Ohio State in the first game of the season.
It's a mid-major versus Duke in the regional that's in North Carolina.
I got no chance, but you never know. Every once in a while, you get an Appalachian State that just pulls something off.
True.
And
good luck.
I don't think it's going to win, but this is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Wow.
You see a movie when you're a kid, and it's like, oh my God, it just touches you on every level. And it was so Chicago, and we'll explain why coming up. But it is maybe the most Chicago movie ever shot.
It really is. I want to get into it, but watching the film and watching the L, just the L and everything that's happening on the north side of Chicago, set in the 60s, shot in the 70s, it's almost one of the just pure Chicago movies that is in
every
the Sweet
scene, 16. Every exterior was shot here. I believe they shot some of the interiors here. There's an interesting story about the production of this, too, because there was an era here in which Mayor Daley, Richard J. Daley, did not want Hollywood types in Chicago making movies because he thought they were going to bring drugs and sex to Chicago.
Yeah.
Because we weren't apparently having either. And there was, and so a lot of filmmakers had to come into Chicago in the 60s into the 70s, and this all happened at post 68. They started loosening up, and this and another movie called Linkin Park Pirates was another movie that was shot in about the same era that was shot on the streets of Chicago. And then they realized, hey, wait a second. After Blues Brothers, everything opened up.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So, that's where you can get the John Hughes canon and everything else in between. The podcast you guys are doing is called The Best Movies of the Decade. Where can we find that podcast?
Everywhere fine podcasts are sold on the internet. We're right now in the top 100 on Apple Podcasts. In our first week.
That's great.
Up, so in the film and television division. So we're really proud of that. And it is one of the projects I am most proud of in my entire career.
Absolutely. Rokan, Richard Roper are here. Their podcast, The Best Movies of the Decade, can be found everywhere podcasts are, fine podcasts are sold. 312-981-7200.
It's free, by the way.
It's free. Ferris Bueller and Cooley High tonight. The ultimate Chicago movie cage match. We'll take our first break, come back, and really get into why you should vote for either film. Stay with us. It is 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight, Rokan and Richard Roper, as they are representing two of the films in the ultimate Chicago movie cage match, Ferris Bueller's Day Off and Cooley High. The texts are coming in, 847, simply no contest. Ferris Bueller is a legendary movie, and people of all generations can quote the lines. Nobody's even heard of Cooley High, is what this person said, Ro.
Mm-hmm. That looks like a lot.
My text got through.
Yeah. A lot of the texts that I get on the show, too. I know. This is a David and Goliath story. If you've not seen this film, it is remarkable. If you grew up in the 1970s in Chicago, you will recognize every scene. It takes you to it, and it's shot in some of the days are dark, right? It's not shot in sunshine. Like everything in Ferris Bueller is like a cartoon, right? It's shot in a real way. There is a great scene, for people who live in Chicago in that era, you would go by the big housing projects and you'd look at those buildings and you wonder, man, what goes on in there, right? And it was also scary, but in this movie, they take you inside.
Yeah.
And they show this guy living with his mom in an apartment.
It's a different ideal. And it's set in the 60s and it's in the 70s. I think we're looking it up. There are 15,000 people living in Cabrini Green at that time. Oh, this is a different kind of housing project than maybe is portrayed in Candyman or one of the other movies. This is about middle class. No, working class.
I mean, it was still dangerous, and they talk about it. But these are kids trying to get away from all of that. They don't, this is not about Chicago gangs. This is truly a high school story of these two guys. Lawrence Hilton Jacobs plays the friend here, the sidekick, and we all know him. He went on to Hello, Mr. Cotter, or whatever the
Brady Boom Boom Washington.
Yeah,
right.
But he ended up, having a big career.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him in this for the first time. And these are two kids who are basically at the end of high school. They're trying to figure out what they're going to go do. And they're going to house parties and they're falling in love. And there's kind of in an intimate sort of love scene, you know, with the main, with the protagonist and this beautiful woman, beautiful girl. And it, it's just, there are so many things. There's sketching on the bus.
Half the movie takes place on the L.
Right.
Yeah,
it really does.
I mean, it's all shot on the streets of Chicago. Yeah. It's really a beautiful film.
Well, and I would say one of the ways it might hold up in certain ways better than Ferris Bueller is just simply, as you guys have mentioned, it was shot in the 70s, released in 75, is that correct?
Yeah.
And, but it was set in the 60s, so it's never going to look dated because it's period piece specific, whereas it's part of the fun of watching Ferris Bueller's Day Off is it's very 1986. from the wardrobes to the hair, I mean, you know, Jennifer Grey's hair is everywhere, to the music. And what I find one of the more fascinating things about rewatching Ferris, and it's interesting because both movies kind of kick off with let's get out of school, right?
Right.
Let's fake a nosebleed. Let's fake we're sick in both cases. But it's fascinating to see how Chicago has changed. Some of the stuff, you know, they go to the Art Institute. There's a beautiful scene there. It's one of the kind of more elegant moments. Obviously, you can still see, you know, the Chagall and all that kind of stuff still there. But then you see like a shot of Grant Park. And you're like, oh, my God, it's just a lot of mud. There's the bean. What is the bean getting in there? And the skyline. There are big giant holes in the skyline. There's a bunch of sky where there now are skyscrapers. So you see how much the city has changed
when
over the last 30
years.
When
you look at Ferris Bueller, is there a scene in your mind that stands out? Because there's so many in that film. But is there one that you're like, that is just unbelievable filmmaking? That makes that movie.
Yeah, that's a great question, Justin. Well, you know, for one thing, I've long maintained that this movie is really Cameron's Day Off. Alan Ruck, another guy went on to a great career, plays Cameron, the depressed best friend of Ferris Bueller. Ferris Bueller doesn't need a day off. His friend needs a day off. And it's in my mind, it's almost a suicide prevention film because he's really rescuing his friend and showing him. He keeps showing him all the great things in life, which brings us to all the great things in Chicago. Mm-hmm. The restaurant, Wrigley Field, the Board of Trade, the Sears Tower. But my favorite moment in the movie is actually the aforementioned Art Institute scene where Mia Sara, who plays Sloan, who's Ferris's girlfriend, they go to the Art Institute and they're holding hands with a bunch of kids and they're kind of going through there as this kind of beautiful music is playing. And then we see Cameron, who's looking at the famous Sunday in the Park painting, you know, that with the little points, and he keeps kind of looking at this one girl and keeps going back and forth. And you realize how sad this guy is. And then you see these other two and you realize they're going to spend the rest of their lives together. So it's this rare, beautiful, dramatic moment in the middle of a basically, you know, good time comedy.
And it's, you think about Ferris Bueller and just pulling clips for that montage at the top, it's the whole movie. Every line in that film.
One of the most quoted movies of the last half century.
It's unbelievable. I left so much stuff on the cutting room floor being like, everyone knows that one, but I can't put it in there. Now, this movie is, I have a poll up that says, you know, of course, you can vote and you can go to the WGN page, and it's not, we're not done yet, but it looks like a runaway for Ferris Bueller. It's a number one seed. It's like Duke.
Yeah.
It's got that. But it is interesting because I think Cooley High does not get enough rep. The scenes in this film and what I really liked about it, and Pete and I watched a ton of it on YouTube today, is that you are absolutely right. The shot, the way they do it, they show Chicago in a particular time. They're not dressing it up. They're not switching. We see this in a lot of Chicago movies where they're going, you know, they're going on Lakeshore and the next thing you know, they're over on Ashland. Or,
right.
This is...
Harry and Sally are still driving the wrong way at the beginning of When Harry Met Sally.
Right. Yeah, I know. And there aren't those kinds of things. You know, they leave what was then Waller High School, which is Lincoln Park High School.
Oh, yeah.
And they get on the bus and they jump on the back of the CTA bus, which kids used to do because there was a bumper back there, and they'd stand on the bumper and hold on until they didn't have to pay. There is an incredible... I will give this credit as the patient zero of Lower Wacker Drive films. Mm. There is a car chase. The first car chase scene on Lower Wacker Drive in cinema history is in Cooley High.
There you go.
And if you stop and you think about Blues Brothers, and you stop and you think about Batman and all the rest of the films, the Transformers, all those things that have blown up Wacker Drive in one way or another, it all started with Cooley High.
Hmm. Mm. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Dave. Dave, which do you like? Do you like Ferris Bueller or Cooley High?
How about neither of them?
You haven't seen Cooley High.
I understand why people are so all over this Ferris Bueller. I mean, what is so fascinating about white upper middle class people from the North Shore? Because I'm from there, I don't want to be reminded of that.
Why you'd love Cooley High.
there's so many great Chicago movies that never seem to get mentioned.
Cooley High! Remember
Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, The Fugitive.
Remember
right?
that one?
Another number one seed. Thanks, Dave. Thanks for that. There'll be plenty of places, Dave, to vote.
Yeah, no one ever talks about that one.
That's the classic self-loathing North Shore caller, you know. I think it was Rom, actually, calling in.
There is a little bit of a pushback.
I don't disagree with what he's saying there in some cases. I mean, people have said that, you know, I think the casting of Matthew Broderick saved, in a way, that movie because, as John Hughes said at the time, if you had the wrong actor in that role, you'd be guarding your wallet. He'd be the, you know, the prototype bro, you know, because you're like, okay, this guy's pretty smug, pretty arrogant. But Matthew Broderick had that inherent likability.
Where was Broderick in his career at that point? He had already done a bunch of, he was a movie star by that point.
Battling John Cryer for every movie that was coming out at the time. Right. As John Cryer even tells and says, I think John Cryer, his initial sexual experiences were because people thought he was Matthew Broderick when he was 18.
You know? It was a whole Brat Pack thing. They were sort of the B team in the Brat Pack, right?
Yeah, well, and Broderick came up, you know, his father was a wonderful actor. There's a show called Family that was a beautiful television series, way ahead of its time. And his father died very young, but he came from an artistic family. So he was a little more grown up, I would say, than some of the, you know, as opposed to Rob Lowe's, like, let's go to the Democratic Convention and meet all the girls.
Right, and he was a New York guy because he was always a New York guy. His father was a famous New
classically
York
trained actor and a pretty serious grown up kid, even when he was playing Ferris Bueller. Of course, Alan Ruck was 29 when he played Cameron, but he just looked younger. And then Mia Sara, who played Sloane, who I love so much, she married Sean Connery's son. It didn't work out, but for a while, her father-in-law was James Bond, which is kind of
fun. How about that? 773 says, I recently saw Cooley High, and I really liked the grit and realism of it. Mm-hmm. It had a definite 70s feel. In a weird way, it reminded me of how Mean Streets captured a certain time feel of NYC.
Very nice. Right. Very well put.
Yeah.
Very well
and, put. Again, more with... they say Cooley High, there's Ferris Bueller, a lot of Ferris Bueller, but this is another Cooley High one that says, 217 says, the African-American Graffiti.
Yes, that's what it was called at the time. As a matter of fact, I think they marketed it as that.
The artwork and everything was very, derivative of American Graffiti. Had come out only about a year earlier. But very much so. And that's a great, that's a great compliment for a small film to be, and American Graffiti was a relatively small film, but a huge hit. Right. Cooley High was actually a big hit. For the money it was spent on it.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the other thing is, and we're not going to win this game. I just know we're not going to win.
Don't give up, man. Don't give up.
But I have such love and respect for this film because it does tell a story that wasn't being told. Mm-hmm. No one was talking about Kids in the Projects. And then it spawned one of the worst sitcoms of all time.
That's true. People will argue with that.
Yeah, right. Mama's Family?
No, Happening?
What's Happening?
What's Happening?
No, but I was going to say,
the watered-down television adaptation of Cooley High.
With Raj and Rerun and all that. And Rerun was basically, the sidekick, which was, and that was nothing like it. Nothing like, and the Raj character was nothing like the main character.
They made a crappy TV show out of Ferris, too.
Well, it's true, they did. I will say, when we get to the next tournament, which will be Best Chicago Sitcoms or Best Chicago Shows,
that'll be
TV
a good
shows.
One. Wow, yeah.
I would also want to do a side one on Best Chicago Characters, and D in What's Happening, the sister of Raj in What's Happening, is one of the best characters
deep
of all
there,
time.
Justin. There he goes.
You guys don't know D?
No, I remember.
Like she was the mean sister.
But they didn't base that in Chicago, that
I think
sitcom.
It was.
I think it was on a soundstage somewhere next to, the old Dick Van Dyke show, but I mean...
Yeah, but I don't recall that.
Richard Roper, Rokan in studio tonight. They're battling it out in our Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. It's Ferris Bueller versus Cooley High. 312-981-7200. Give us a ring, text, you can call in, and also go to a Facebook page if you want to vote for either film. It's up there right now on our WGN radio page. We'll take a quick break, come back, and continue, so stay with us. All right, 720 WGN, Justin Kaufman with you. We're doing the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match with Ro Khan and Richard Roper, who you can check out their podcast, which is available where you get your podcast, The Best Movies of the Decade, which is out now. You guys
Apple Podcasts, by the way. We
Apple
cracked
podcast?
The top 100.
Yeah. How often do you guys put it out? Once a week?
Yeah, roughly. I mean, what we're going to do is sort of a limited series. So each season, if you will be about a different topic. So we're going to have 6 episodes, I think, total.
Right.
So we've separated them by genre.
Got it.
Animated, action films. And then the final one, we'll do my top 10 movies overall of the decade, which has been a lot of fun put together, Justin. Because you go back, you're like, oh, that was 2008. I thought that was... And then other ones, you're kind of surprised that they were in the 2010s. Because it feels like it's been so long since they came out.
That's got to be so hard. It just feels like I would have such a hard time. I would miss so many great movies, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
And we're doing everything they told us not to do in podcasts. Which
Who told
was,
us?
I know these. We went to all these podcast consultants, and they're all like, "Oh, you got to, you know, sound like you're on NPR. Sound like you're Justin Kaufman." And I think it was exactly the quote. And
high praise.
We decided we wanted to make it lyrical and, yeah. and you know, the high production values and stuff like that, because it's about movies.
That's
and
great.
Especially
That's
the
awesome.
Comedy musical episode 4, which I believe is either it should be hitting right now as we're talking.
Yeah.
That is one of my proudest moments.
Oh, fantastic.
One of our proudest moments.
I'm looking forward to listening to it. All right, we got some people on the line for the cage match tonight for the Sweet 16. Ferris Bueller versus Cooley High. Ferris Bueller, the number one seed. It is in the actual, when you look at it, there are four number one seeds. There's Ferris Bueller, there's The Fugitive, The Untouchables, and Blues Brothers.
Yeah.
And they're all
very
kind
strong.
Of, yeah, those are strong movies, and they're hard to beat. And I know a lot of people are like, well, this isn't even a matchup. But it is, because Cooley High, and I'll show you exactly how they got here. Ferris Bueller destroyed Hardball in the first round.
As well it should.
That, now, there's a case of a really good nonfiction book getting turned into a really crummy Keanu Reeves movie.
There you go. And the second round, it easily, I don't even think it was close. I think When Harry Met Sally beat Transformers in the first round, and easily Ferris Bueller just dispatched When Harry Met Sally, which a lot of people argued because they're like, that's not a Chicago movie.
No,
but as we know,
movie.
When Harry Met Sally... in Chicago.
Yeah, it doesn't count.
You're
tearing hamstring making that stretch.
And Cooley High beat Three the Hard Way, which is a great film that shows a lot of great Chicago things in the 70s.
Good pick.
And then bounced Rookie of the Year in the second round, which is a good movie as well. But,
you know what? I'm proud that we got this far in the tournament.
There you go. So let's go to the call. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Veronica. What do you like, Veronica? Do you like Ferris or Cooley High?
Definitely Cooley High.
Yeah. Why do you pick that?
Well, a couple things. When I remember it, I kind of got a glimpse into what my older sister and brother were kind of doing when they would sneak out and go to, like, high school parties. And I just remember being, like, shocked when I saw it, you know, because there was a lot of feeling up and grinding. And
it was very crowded.
Stuff like that in the closet.
You remember, like, the room, and they walk into the room, they walk into the apartment, and it's like you can't move in the apartment. And you're like, oh, something bad's going to happen here. But they somehow find their way to the bedroom. And you know what? And I want to point this out, because we were just talking about this off the air. In the 1970s, you did not see two African-American actors kissing. You never saw it. You saw Shaft, John Shaft, you know, they would allude to they were just going to have sex or they're coming off of having sex, but you never saw an intimate...
It wasn't romance. It was Pam Grier. It was sex, but not romance, you'd see. Right. Yeah.
This, there was... Yeah. It's one of the... It is, to me, one of the sexiest, sweetest scenes ever shot is where the two of them just kind of making out on the bed as like high school kids, and you're like, just about to graduate from high school, and it was just, you know, and that it strikes you, and what it did. I mean, I'm a white kid. I'm a as Justin calls me, I'm a privileged white kid from downtown Chicago, and I watch this movie, and I'm like, I totally relate, because this movie took place 5 blocks west of where I grew up.
Oh, wow.
Well, thanks, Veronica. Thanks for the call.
Veronica,
thank you,
that
guys.
Was awesome.
And don't forget about Love Jones.
Yeah, Love Jones. I'm a big fan of Love Jones, and it did not get out of the first round, unfortunately.
but it was in the tournament.
It was in the tournament.
There's a lot of Chicago movies that didn't even make your cut.
I know. And I honestly felt for that. I wanted Love Jones to get in, and it didn't make it. That was a bummer. I love that movie.
Oh, man.
That's my generation. I love it. Thanks, Veronica.
I want to also say props
to you guys. Bye.
Props to Veronica for using the term feeling up, which is a very 1960s and 70s term.
Let's go to Eric. Eric, do you like Ferris or Cooley High?
Can you hear me, guys?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I'm going to switch my vote. I was in Ferris Bueller. Excellent. Excellent.
You were in it?
But I got it. Huh?
You were in the movie?
Yeah, I was in the movie. So I was an extra. So I was in the Wrigley Field scene right behind Matthew Broderick going to go bada, 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 so wing, bada. And the parade thing going down Dearborn, I was in the front of the float dressed like Prince, because I was in a band at the time, and I had on my Prince coat and the gloves and everything.
Nice.
Excellent movie.
Nicely done.
But I have
to go
with Cooley High.
Really?
Because I grew up in a really good upper middle class African American family, and my mother made me and my sisters watch the movie to show us the other side. And I took a liking to it, because I'm like, oh, that's what really goes on. And I think Rokan mentioned it, when you drive by the projects in Chicago at the time, you were like, I wonder what's really going on in there, because we were not allowed to go down there.
Yeah, it's a that's great. So a switch from Ferris to Cooley High. See, Ro, you're working. It's working.
Cooley High.
There you go. Thank you. And
by the way, can I just say, and I'm not doubting Eric, but the I was an extra in Ferris Bueller is the equivalent of I saw Mark Burley's Perfect Game. I was there for the 85 Bears. Yeah, okay. All
he was
right.
Too specific, though. I'm with him on this. I believe him.
Too funny.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks. There you go. How about that? All right, let's go to Rick. Rick, what do you like? Do you like Ferris or Cooley High?
I have an anti-Ferris vote because of the kid wearing the Detroit hockey jersey. That's not very Chicago to me.
That's true.
Well, can I address that? That's a great point. Can I? Is that Rick on the phone? Can I address that?
Yes, Rick.
That is an absolutely great point. It was done on purpose to illustrate how Cameron was just always going against the grain to the point where he would wear a Red Wings jersey in Chicago.
Mm.
All right.
plus he was an extra in his own movie, and he saw Mark Burley's Perfect Game.
Thanks, Rick.
Besides that, I have to go with Cooley High just because even though I'm a high schooler from the 80s, not the 70s, it just reminds me of more of the Chicago that I'm familiar with.
That
I remember. Can I ask one thing before you let me go?
Yeah, go ahead.
The movie Thief, did it make
Thief
at all?
It didn't make the Sweet 16, but it did make the tournament. It had a good showing, and it got beat in the first round. And I hate to tell you who beat it. It was Judgment Night.
Okay, now, Rick, I want to just say something.
Yeah, thanks, Rick.
That's another one of those movies because of the way it looked.
Right.
Very similar to Cooley High because of the way it was shot.
Salesman, yeah.
And there was also the sense, you know, like you're going down Randolph in Thief.
Yeah.
Like on every time they're in the car, they're going down Randolph for some reason. And you get to see what it looked like back then.
It's
and
awesome.
And it was, you know, all those theater marquees. And all that.
All of it was great. Thanks, Rick.
You have a chance for people. Yeah, thanks, Rick. A Thief is one of my favorite James Caan movies. Robert Prosky is the bad guy. Tuesday Weld.
Did Michael Mann do that film?
That's a Michael Mann film.
That's awesome.
Before he went on to do a lot of, you know, kind of bigger budget, you know, his precursor to films like Heat. But Thief is a great film.
Unbelievable. And, you know, there's also a text that said, what happened to My Bodyguard? My Bodyguard didn't. My Bodyguard actually made it out of the first round into the second round. But it got beat by Wayne's World. I forgot what it actually.
And I love Wayne's World, but that should be for your Aurora bracket when you do that one, Justin.
There's been a lot of people that have been up in my grill about Chicago versus Chicagoland. Like last night, people got really angry about Home Alone being called a Chicago movie. And I decided, no, we're bringing it all together.
If you can hear you, if they can hear you pretty much, you know.
I think that's fair.
That's fair.
I think that's okay.
So 312-981-7200, the phone number. I mean, we're getting some great stuff. And
Rose like the Buddha gig of this thing. He's moving up in the polls.
I have to say.
You're at 4%, now you're at 8.
Okay, Joe Biden. Get smoking, Joe.
Now, who wants to wrestle? I'll do some push-ups right now.
312-981-7200. We'll take our break here. We'll come back and we'll continue with this. Call in right now because we're going to tally the numbers and get to who wins this matchup between Ferris Bueller and Cooley High. Richard Roper and Ro Khan in studio tonight.
Pray for me.
720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Ro Khan and Richard Roper are in studio. Check out their podcast, The Best Movies of the Decade. They are in studio because they are repping tonight for the ultimate Chicago movie cage match between Ferris Bueller and Cooley High. Now, when we put the poll out a couple weeks, it's been a week now since we put the poll out, and the numbers are not even close.
Right.
You're seeing 90% of the vote for Ferris Bueller. It's hard because Ferris, a lot of people say, even in the comments, they say Ferris all the way. So it's surprising to me to listen to people call in and to text in and give as much love to Cooley High.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't think that was going to happen. It feel like it might be a stretch, but all the calls and most of the texts as well.
Well, Ferris Bueller is a great national movie, right? It's a teenage story. It's not so much about Chicago, although it does pay great homage, right? Because it takes you through that travelogue of Chicago. But it's a teenage angst story.
Yeah,
right?
That's why it's still, you know, so popular 30 years down the road, definitely.
Cooley High is a coming of age story, like so many other coming of age stories, and it is, you know, set in a specific time frame in the 1960s in Chicago, even though it was shot in the 1970s, and it is more akin to American Graffiti, right? It's and they marketed, and we've mentioned already tonight, it's the African American version of American Graffiti. It's African American Graffiti, and it is It's a special, but it's an indie film. So you're taking a big Hollywood production, and you're putting up this little indie film up against it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get creamed.
But that's the tournament. That's what's great about the tournament.
Yeah, well, right? And, you know, Rhodes makes some great points, too. And Cooley High is grounded in a much more authentic experience in ways. I mean, Ferris Bueller's Day Off is a fun fairy tale and a fable. And, you know, the big tragedy is when he kills a car. Right. As opposed in Cooley High, where there's real life and death and consequences and some really, you know, there's some touching moments in Ferris Bueller, but there's some heartbreaking moments in Cooley High. Yeah.
Now, the music. Let's talk about the music, because in Cooley High, they do which I think is amazing. I didn't think about this at all, but they do It's So Hard to Say Goodbye to Yesterday when they're at the funeral at the end, which is, I don't know who the original, who did that original song, but that's a song that, who is it, the guys who do the a cappella band.
Was it Boyz II Men?
Boyz II Men, Boyz II Men does, and they called it, I think they called the record Cooley High.
Like, they did, their first album,
so it's,
like,
it's actually an homage to Cooley High to cover that song. But there's a lot of great soul music and sort of 50s and 60s African-American music in Cooley High.
And there are complaints that it's anachronistic because some of the music, it takes place in 1965 or 66, and there's music from the 67, 68 that's in it. It's, you know, there's a Motown soundtrack to it. It's very interesting because you have to always look, when you listen to music in films, you have to look at the business model of what's going on there, because that's what Hollywood is all about. So who was lending their music, or who could they afford to buy the music of at that particular moment?
Right.
And that's and this was a, you know, it was a small independent film. I mean, made for maybe $5 million or whatever it was back in 1974 when they were making the film. Debuted.
Well, I mean, Jerry Butler was either was in it or he had music in it.
Iceman.
And I mean, if you think about
for
it,
sure.
I read that Curtis Mayfield book, and we had Curtis Mayfield's son on, Todd Mayfield. He talked about how Seward Park and the area right there by Cabrini Green was where the Impressions worked out, and a lot of like boy bands of the 50s and 60s that were working out in that part of North Chicago. So that's where they were getting that music.
Literally hang around a garbage can on fire. I mean, and that's it's almost like a trope, right? It's almost like a, but it is, but that's really, I grew up near there. I did not grow up in Cabrini Green. I grew up on the other side of those tracks, literally. And, you know, driving through there, that is very much what you would see. And that's why that movie touches me so much, because it put a human face. It put a family face. It put a real, you know, these are real people living and dying there, not just, you know, that sort of like...
That's just the place you went by and said, that's a foreign land. And you saw that there were more similarities...
Not like Vacation.
Coming of age experience.
Like the Vacation movie, when they go to St. Louis, like roll them up, and you know they're getting their tire stall and stuff like that.
Right,
a caricature. You're seeing like real humans, and it is. That's what I absolutely adore about the film.
And you go back to the music, Justin. You're talking about, and Rose, right? You know, John Hughes had already at that point, he could do anything he wanted. So if they wanted to run the theme for My Dream of Jeannie and it cost whatever it cost for a 6 second joke, they would do it. Don Kashane, you know, they could license huge songs or TV themes, whatever they wanted to do, because they had the budget to
do it. But that being said, because everyone will know Twist and Shout and everyone will know Don Kashane, everyone will know those big moments in the film. There's a lot of alt sort of 80s
Dream Academy was a band he loved
the
to use.
The big beat downtown when they're going downtown. There is this sort of edgy music that's in Ferris Bueller.
Yeah, he loved, John Hughes famously would give cassettes, mixtapes to cast members like The Breakfast Club. This is what your character would be listening to. This is what your character would be listening to, which I think is a great way to help young actors in particular kind of flesh out, you know, their characters and their backstories.
Yeah, it really is. The music in Ferris is, and I didn't realize this when I was pulling clips as well, how much music is in Ferris Bueller. There is not many moments where they're not having a track underneath what they're doing.
Yeah, in scenes that at that point you would not usually hear music. It's cut in some ways like a musical. Yeah. Some of the visual editing,
because he does, and there's a lot of direct address to the camera,
breaking the fourth wall, and one of the first movies, not the first, but one of the first movies to, you know, like stick around. There's something really funny at the end of the credits where you go away. What are you doing here?
Right, and so it is. It's I think of all the John Hughes movies, because Breakfast Club obviously had some awesome music in it, music that crossed over and made it top 40.
The music was better actually than the film.
Yeah, right.
I think in that particular movie.
Right, but in Ferris Bueller, the music is pretty top-notch. I mean, it all the way from the montage stuff to the end, the bow, bow, like the whole
those guys, Yellow, Mellow, Jello, or whatever, must be still getting royalty checks, because how many commercials have used that?
So that's the opposite side of that. So John Hughes was able to cut his own quote, because people would actually want to be in those films, so they wouldn't charge.
Right.
You know, and that's... Listen, it's... yes, Ferris Bueller is a great Chicago film, and it's probably, I think Blues Brothers shows Chicago off in a more glorious way than Ferris Bueller, but it's 1-2 right there. They're very close.
The knock on Ferris Bueller is that it shows off downtown and the North Shore. The Blues Brothers goes all over.
Yeah,
Chicago.
I mean, it's his day off, and people try to recreate it. I think it takes about 19 hours to do all the things. And figure it out. It's like, how do they have that big giant dinner, and they still made it to the Cubs game? But, you know, it's
all right,
movies.
So looking at the poll numbers, and I'm going to pull it up right now, the ultimate, and we're going to hit this thing, and it's going to...
You're going to make me very sad here.
88%. Ferris Bueller to a 11% for Cooley High. Now, that's just the poll.
Yes, but that makes me the Tony Preckwinkle of this particular election.
It probably reflects the percentage of people who have seen the two films respectively. I would say that's a great double feature to watch. Watch Ferris and then watch Cooley High.
I would bet, though, if you did the poll right now, after the conversation we just had, and we heard how passionate Rokan was for Cooley High, you heard the guy was in Ferris Bueller, and he's like, I changed my vote. I like Cooley High. And the texters coming in, the person said, Ferris Bueller all the way, although Ro did a good job.
There you go.
So I would say
you're saying he could maybe to be 10% instead of 11?
75-25. He might get it to 75-25. But Rokan and Richard Rover.
It's a great bracket. The entire overall bracket, there's not a clunker in the bunch. There's great films on there.
So Ferris Bueller moves on to the Elite Eight. Wow. We'll take on, and I think right now we'll take on Adventures in Babysitting in the second round.
That should be slaughter rule, 97-3.
I might have to reseed.
Quite frankly.
To reseed to make this work. Ferris Bueller eyeing the Final Four, which is coming up. Richard Roper will move on with Ferris Bueller. We'll hear from him again. Rokan, sorry to say that your day has ended. But we're trying to treat it like The Bachelor, where maybe we bring the contestants back later.
Right. Do I have a t-shirt and a hat I put on with the label still sticker still on? Thanks, Mom.
Thanks,
Hi, Mom. Mommy.
You guys got to listen to the best movies of the decade, which is Ro and Richard's podcast, which you can find on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else.
And Spotify.
Episodes
Stitcher
are out now. Yeah. Check it out. And thanks, guys, for sticking around and playing the Ultimate Chicago Movie Cage Match. Appreciate it.